This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
DC for you. DC for you. DC for you.
Place to Be Nation Pop, welcome back to DC for you, the only all DC Comics dedicated podcast right here on the Place to Be Nation Pop feed. I am, of course, one of your hosts, Russell Sellers, and joining me, as always, on this wonderful journey into DC Comics is Mr. Todd Weber. How are you tonight, Todd?
DC for you. DC. I'm great, Russell. What's happening, man?
Man, it's been a busy time here at Place to Be Nation Pop, as everybody knows. But you know what? We always have time to talk some great classic DC comics. And it's that time of the month again where we are going where we're going to be jumping into an all-timer classic. This month's episodes have all been kind of dedicated to Superman, and we discussed what classic issue we wanted to touch on, and I think that there was one that really stood out above the other. Would you agree?
I would agree. It's a classic. It's probably my favorite standalone, well, at least my favorite 20th century Superman story. How about that?
That is a
fair assessment. Qualifier.
That is a strong qualifier. It is on pretty much every list of best Superman stories. If you're going to talk to any Superman fan, this issue is going to come up. It is, of course, Action Comics number 583, which is better known by Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. It is a classic story from Alan Moore and Kurt Swan, one of the all-time great Superman artists. So with that, Todd, tell the people a little bit about what is Action Comics 583 about?
Yes, well, actually, it's a two-part tale because there is the Superman issue that kind of concludes the story. But yeah, to start in Action Comics. And this is kind of looked at as the close to the pre-crisis continuity of Superman. Superman was changing with new John Byrne origin and kind of some new rules. So the Superman editor, I believe it was Julius Schwartz. I don't quite recall if it was Schwartz or just the other powers that be at DC in the mid-80s said, all right, let's do one last thing with Superman. Let's kind of tie up all the loose ends and create the ultimate Superman story. And so I believe they solicited some pitches, and Alan Moore's kind of what would happen if, like, we had the ultimate throwdown tying up the story. You know, the last Superman story ever is basically how he created it. And I got to say, it holds up even 35 years later.
I would very much agree, because unlike many of the classic comics that we've talked about before on this show, Todd, I had actually read this one before.
Good.
Yes, this was one that certainly stood out to me even before I was a really big Superman fan. This was just a tremendous bit of storytelling from Alan Moore, which was, of course, to be expected around this time in his career. He's kind of on all cylinders. And this is really the ultimate throwdown between Superman, some of his like closest supporting cast, and of course his biggest villains ever. You've got it from of course Lex Luthor, who is also kind of possessed, I guess, by Brainiac. The Kryptonite Man is here. He was a much bigger deal in the Silver Age.
Oh yes,
and of course
we had Metallo too. I think.
No, Metallo is not a part of this because Kryptonite Man is here. He's kind of filling that role, but we do get the Legion of Supervillains. that being Saturn Woman, Lightning Lord, and the Cosmic King. They come back from the 30th century because they know this is, according to their history, the moment where Superman dies, defeated by Lex Luthor and the Kryptonite Man, because they've managed to corner Superman and his closest allies, his closest non-superpowered allies anyway, that being like Lois, Jimmy, Lana, Perry White and his wife. They're all trapped inside the Fortress of Solitude, which then becomes encased in this golden dome that none of the other DC superheroes are able to penetrate. So they're all standing outside, hopelessly firing away with all their Batman and Robin grabbing sticks and pounding on the outside of it, but to no avail. This is going to be a fight between just Superman and his greatest foes. And of course, the Fortress of Solitude defenses seem to keep them somewhat at bay, to at least keep them from getting inside the fortress. But Superman now knows, you know, he's coming to grips with, he's going to have to go out there and face them at some point. He's going to have to actually take fight to those who have encased him there, because they can't just stay in the Fortress of Solitude forever. So it's a pretty harrowing story, honestly. Like it builds upon itself, and there's some pretty hefty stakes that take place in this story.
Yes, you get, you know, the Clark Kent is outed pretty early as the secret identity of Superman, and therefore all of the people he loved are thrown into danger. You know, they have targets on their heads, so he's got to work extra hard to protect them. The Daily Planet is destroyed. You know, all these things are just not just symbolically, but they're being removed and kind of destroyed and clearing the path for a brand new, you know, what we just kind of cleared the whole table of Superman. How would we let this story play out to the nth degree? And, you know, I'm trying to think, I don't want to spoil the villain, because it's the one time this villain has ever been, or this character who is to be the villain, is ever shown to be the true malevolent, you know, the one time I've ever liked this character in a story, honestly.
That's fair, because I'm not a huge fan of that villain either. Most of the time where he pops up, I just kind of roll my eyes like, are we really going to do this? But there are times whenever he gets some shine on his name, and this is certainly his time to shine. The way that Alan Moore writes him, or I guess transforms the character into something that I had in other stories never seen him be.
Oh no!
it was like, oh, now he actually feels like he belongs in the pantheon of best Superman villains, because this is pretty extreme measures stuff. And there's so many like heart-rending things that happen throughout this issue, all because of this stupid little game he's playing. The one that that gets me, and I think any Superman fan, anyone who's ever read Superman comics, you read this issue and you get to the moment when I guess I'll spoil this a little bit. When Crypto kills Kryptonite Man, like rips his heart out, I guess. But to his own detriment, because he's biting into pure Kryptonite and it kills Crypto right alongside him. Not to mention, this story is also the deaths of Lana Lang and Jimmy Olsen.
And just all the people that loved Superman sacrificing themselves for him, basically. You know, he had saved their lives so many times that, you know, it's very poignant for them. They know what they're getting into here.
As crazy and silver agey as the story is, because it still has all the classic marks of that, this is also just such I guess the descriptor word I would use is very cinematic story. Like it seems very like wide scope, like widescreen kind of presentation. But the stakes for Superman have never been higher, and you you have such an amazing like flow between story, script, and the artwork. It all just, it feels like it every bit the gut punch that Alan Moore probably envisioned in his head whenever he described it to Kurt Swan.
Yeah, and you know, in looking back, we remember that this is a two-part story. The second part is the action 43, and the first part is Superman 423. Okay. So, and I had forgotten, you know, I was thinking Metallo, and Metallo was in that first part.
I got you.
Along with, you know, the origin of how Luthor and Brainiac kind of emerged here, and the Daily Planet blown away, the Legion of Superheroes coming to visit Superman before the Legion of Supervillains show up in part two of the story. The other thing, and Bizarro, you get some weird prankster and the Toy Man. The original terrible Silver Age incarnations of those characters show up, and, you know, because they teamed up, they were able to really get to Superman here. It's kind of interesting. But the other thing I wanted to notice about the, or wanted to note about the first part is that George Perez did the inks on the first part.
Oh, nice.
So it brings out the Kurt Swan art, makes it look a little bit more modern. The second half is not Perez on inks. I believe it's Murphy Anderson or Paul Kupperberg. I'm going to look it up really quick before. It is Kurt Schaffenberger. I knew it was one of those guys, one of the Silver Age Kurt Swan type inkers, you know. And Kurt Swan, we should talk about, he was the Silver Age Superman artist. You know, you associate that character or that artist's work with the Superman of that time more than any other, I got to say. So it's appropriate that he does the art here, even though it's kind of anachronistic to have the old school artist with the new wave writer. But I think it works for this particular story.
It's a good transition. It's a way for us, or at least for fans at the time, fans of the Silver Age, to kind of say their last goodbyes to this take on the character. Not that the character itself was going away, but Superman, like many characters in the post-Crisis on Infinite Earths era DC, were going to see themselves like fully reinvented. And Superman is one of the biggest examples of that. So getting a, I guess to turn a phrase, a swan song of sorts here, this is a way for them to say a proper goodbye to the Silver Age Man of Steel by, I guess we can, like,
we can spoil it. It's a 35-year-old story.
Yeah, it's a 35-year-old story that this story, in Action Comics anyway, is told as a retrospective from Lois Lane's point of view.
Yes.
She is relating the story years after it has occurred to a cub reporter, or a new reporter, who is just kind of telling her story. Like, here's what happened that day in the Fortress of Solitude. And it goes into, you know, show how Superman makes a really tough decision to kill one of his all-time greatest foes, one of his most powerful foes. And when he makes that decision, it's a breaking point in his head where he says, you know, nobody has the right to kill, and especially not Superman. So he made the decision to step into a vault of gold kryptonite, which is, if I'm remembering my Superman lore correctly, will also
depowers him.
Depowers him, and then he walks out into the cult, as Lois says, into the Arctic, and is later found deceased.
He takes off his ruby medallion. And then turns into an old man. No, wait, that's Game of Thrones. Sorry. I'm getting my pop culture mixed up.
Oh, by the way, everybody should go listen to Binge, please. Todd's been covering the last season of Game of Thrones, which I am also very obsessively watching. So it's, man.
By the time this airs, the season will have been over. But if you need a recap, that's what Binge, please, is there for. But this kind of ties a bow on Superman, and he doesn't let him. There are actual consequences. He punishes himself for killing a villain. And so he goes away, and we are left with a wink at the end of the issue, which is great. You know, this issue is actually set in 1997. The interview takes place in 1997. And you've got all this fake, not fake, but what they thought the future would look like, supposedly. These futuristic clothes and furniture in Lois's house with her new husband, Mr. Elliot.
Quote unquote, Mr. Elliot.
Mr. Elliot, yeah. Anyway, I think that's one surprise we can not spoil.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny. The future you think, think it's going to look like the Jetsons, and it ends up just being kind of what you've got slightly better quality clothing, or at least and haircuts, you think.
Mr. Moore might have actually been a little bit more run in his view of 1997, although I would say that it looks a little bit more like 1987.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't really change that much. So let's we can't really say that he was all that far off, or that he made it look just too unbelievable or anything. But I love this as an ending. It's a wink and a nod ending.
Very Silver Age-y, yeah.
Yeah, very much so. Very tongue-in-cheek, wink and nod ending, something that that Alan Moore does incredibly well. So this is I think I could call this one of the ultimate Superman stories.
Without question, yeah.
Just of the sheer scope of it all. Like, as I was reading just this chapter of it, I was thinking, man, this is a great kind of climax, or a big climactic sequence that would work really well as a film.
That'd be an interesting way to treat it, huh?
Yeah. So if you got to tell a trilogy of Superman films, this is kind of where I would want to end it. Like, this is how you have Superman go out without a giant doomsday monster punching him to death.
Yes, I know of what you're speaking.
not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm a big fan of the Death of Superman story, as you'll find. But reading this, it felt more like this is how you could give Superman a quote unquote happy ending.
The Dark Knight Rises kind of ending.
Yeah, very much so. Like this. This is the kind of thing that I think a lot of those older school Superman fans would be very appreciative of. They might have been mad about it at first because their version of the character was going to fade in the background, but at least they got to say goodbye.
I don't know. I mean, I wonder. I guess some of the older school fans were kind of mad about it at first, but it's Alan Moore.
Yeah, you can't stay mad.
The guy recognized as the best writer, especially in the mid-1980s, there was maybe Alan Moore and Frank Miller, and that was it. And as far as the top-notch, next-level writers who were doing stuff. So, plus, you were getting John Byrne and Marv Wolfman coming on to Superman the very next month. Right after this, a brand-new Superman number one, or actually Man of Steel, miniseries dropped right after this, and the regular Superman titles were put on hiatus until the completion of that. And then the regular Superman title came back as Adventures of Superman. You got a brand new Superman number one, and then Action Comics became something different altogether. It became a team-up book for a while. So, a lot of big things, but I don't remember anybody being so upset about it. Of course, I was, 13 years old at this time, so I wasn't, the guy at the comic shop going, worst thing ever.
Now,
this is happening.
You were the target audience for this book.
Yeah.
Because
I was the guy that was going to be excited by Steve Byrne coming on.
Yeah, they wanted you reading this and saying, all right, this is a chance to say goodbye to this version of Superman, but it's also, I feel like with that ending, it's telling you there's so much more that's happened. There's so much more left to do with this character. And he just needs a fresh face, but this take on the character who's been around, since I guess the Silver Age version, we would say the 60s, he's had a long run, a good 20 plus year run. And we're going to allow this version of the character to have something that comics characters so rarely get, and that is an actual ending. So if you read this issue and you get to that last panel with the S-Shield and the little banner draped across the bottom that says the end, that's kind of nice, honestly. Like, if I were to feel like I wanted a good, strong ending for the Superman mythos, man, this is really it. This is the best possible ending that anybody could have written this character.
Is this kind of like the Superman version of The Dark Knight Returns, only in a much different tone and a much shorter story? You know, it's a possible future, or looked at as a future that has a definitive ending. And of course, we know Dark Knight Returns didn't actually have a definitive ending because Frank Miller couldn't leave it well enough alone.
If he'd have taken a page out of Alan Moore's book, he probably could have just said, you know what, that's it. And we would have just remembered it as, you know what, that was the greatest Batman story of all time. Boy, we wish he'd have followed up on it. Wait, no.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, good with it. Leave it alone. Anyway.
don't touch it no more. And Alan Moore, though, I'm glad you put it that way, because I never even thought about it like that. But yeah, this is kind of the Dark Knight Returns moment for Superman. Like, what happened to the Man of Tomorrow is absolutely that for the Man of Steel. He is portrayed at his best, at his worst, and then at his most noble, right there in the end. And that's kind of exactly what The Dark Knight Returns did for Batman. It brought him low. It brought him back. It was like this great comeback story, not just in physical terms of a Batman coming back, but in terms of a character rediscovering why Batman is important and what Batman means to the greater society. This does that for Superman. This is why Superman is important. This is the importance of the symbol of Superman,
mm-hmm.
and why it makes that decision he makes at the end of the book feel that much more weighted and important and emotionally impactful, because you feel every bit of that. Even if you just read this issue by itself, I feel like you get a complete story. It's one of those that just...
You do.
It just drops you in the action and says, this is where we are. That's all you know. You're seeing a Superman at his lowest point, but it's in that moment where he fully comes back and is the Superman who can make the hard decision, who can finally make that call that he'd hoped that he'd never be put in the position to have to make. But when he does it with that measure of confidence that he's doing the right thing. And in that, it is also self-sacrifice, which is something that few characters really pull off well. But when Superman does it, it carries just a tremendous amount of weight. And Alan Moore absolutely knocks that out of the park with a big assist from Kurt Swan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't recall Kurt Swan doing a whole lot after this. I know he did a little Aquaman miniseries and some things here and there, but he was mostly retired at this point, or after this series completed. But what a way to go out on, you know? Kind of, if you're going to be associated with something, this is a really great final chapter to Swan's career. So I love it. I know, even symbolically, this is ending the Bronze Age. It still feels Silver Age to me. The things, but yeah, it's technically the end of the Bronze Age Crisis. Yeah,
my mistake there. I'm so
no, I did it too.
I'm so in Silver Age mode from all the Marvel
Age.
It's killing me with the Silver Age stuff. But yes, this is the end of Bronze Age Superman. But still, there's not a ton of difference between Bronze Age Superman and Silver Age Superman. They still have a lot of commonality.
Yeah, I mean, when Neil Adams started doing some Superman stuff and the Kryptonite Nevermore, you got kind of an expansion of his supporting cast and going into the TV age instead of things. So there are some slight things and changes, but it's not it's a natural kind of thing. It wasn't like Batman, who Silver Age was campy and then Bronze Age turned into the dark, you know, the Caped Crusader, the dark detective.
Yeah, that is a fair point. Like the through line of Bronze Age with Batman is very dark, but with Superman you get just a it felt like a more natural transition, like they were just kind of expanding on the character that already existed rather than drastically changing him in any way. And in some ways, I guess post Crisis Superman is kind of that way too. They do change him a good bit in his power set by not making him so just godlike powerful, at least for a good long while. But at his core, he's still that same character. He's still always
he's the best of us.
Yes, he is absolutely like the best example of humanity, and that's what Superman represents, and that's what I feel like is best represented in this story. I think that whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow is the Superman at his pinnacle, at his peak. So this is going to get my highest recommendation. I can't recommend people go get like check this book out enough. And you can get both of these issues right now on the DC Universe app,
yes.
Which is where I read this issue of Action Comics. So highly recommend people go do that. What was the other part, the first part of the story?
Superman 423, cover date September 1986.
All right, Superman 423. That is an issue that will also go high on the recommended list. And that's... that's really all I've got to say about this issue. Anything else to add about whatever happened to the Man of Tomorrow?
No, if you haven't read it, come on, man. Do yourself a favor. This is prime. This is absolutely top five Superman story of all time for me. I'm trying to think of some others off the top of my head. What for the Man Who Has Everything? Another Alan Moore story.
Absolutely.
Whatever happened to Truth, Justice, and the American Way? Is that the name of it? No.
Yeah, that's
what's so funny about Truth and Justice in the American Way. There it is.
Yeah, What's So Funny About Truth, Justice in the American Way is another good one. That was led into an animated movie called Superman versus the Elite. That's a really good Manchester. I think that was the first Manchester Black story. Good stuff. All of that is just like classic Superman. You should go read those, and I think you can right now on DCU. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have All-Star Superman. That's probably another one I would say is a top five Superman story for me. The Grant Morrison.
Yeah, Grant Morrison, Frank Quitely. That is a tremendous story. Probably my favorite of Grant Morrison's writings. I think that's him at his best. So there you go. There are some prime examples of great Superman stories. Not just the one that we just talked about, but all those. You can go check those out. And, of course... stay tuned right here on PTB and Pop as we're going to continue looking at other Superman media from DC Comics. We're going to be taking a look at a TV show in the next episode, something that there are quite a few fans of here on the old Pop Network, as we're going to take a look at the pilot episode of Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. So with that, that brings us to an end to this episode. And of course you can find us on social media. Follow the Place to Be Nation Comics Twitter at PTBN Comics. Join the Place to Be Nation Comics group on Facebook. That is Place to Be Nation Comics. Join, just request to join. We'll let you in. It's a open forum where we're happy to talk comics with everybody. And you can find me, of course, on Twitter and Instagram at Russell_Sellers. Todd, where are they finding you?
Guitars of Green on Instagram and Todd Weber Guitar on Twitter.
Yes, go follow both of us. There's lots of content from both of us. Of course, we mentioned the Marvel Age podcast. I mentioned Todd's Binge Please, which is a fun show. We appreciate you guys listening here on DC for you. And come back next time as we're going to have even more for you. So until then, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following. Place to Be Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. The Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, thanks for listening to another episode of DC4U. But before you head off to another website or check out another podcast network, make sure you take a look around at everything that we've got to offer right here on Place to Be Nation. Over on the Pop feed, of course, you can catch me and Todd, part of the Sarcastic Four, as we continue our look at 1971 and the second of a three-part episode on the newest episode of Marvel Age. On the 30th episode of Songs with Friends, Steve and Kelly pay tribute to 1994. That was a good year in music. The Hard Traveling Fanboys continue Spider-Man Month with a full-length review of the latest Marvel Cinematic Universe film, Spider-Man Far From Home. Over on Geek and Sassy, Tim Capel's joining the girls to recap Season 2 and preview Season 3 of Stranger Things, which is on Netflix right now. And you can join Glenn and Scott as they discuss and debate the Democratic hopefuls for the coming presidential election in a new Glenn Butler podcast hour spectacular. I probably butchered that. But on a new episode of the NBA team, Adam Murray and Andrew Reich are here to reflect on what has been quite the last week in NBA land. And of course, the greatest song of the 80s tournament is on right now. New polls are being posted every day. Make sure you go and like that page on Facebook, cast your votes, let your voice be heard. Then we've got the Place to Be Wrestling feed. Tim, Jenny, and Greg are back with a brand new Talking WCW as they look at War Games. And of course, JT and Chad open up the 1996 pay-per-view year with a look at Royal Rumble on the latest Wrestling Warzone. Place to Be Nation staff members Jennifer Smith, Drew Wardlaw, and Matt Souza gather to break down the 1986 Crockett Cup. And in the 10th episode of Row 1, Seat 1, Ben welcomes documentary filmmaker and wrestling superfan John Filipovich, that's it, to the podcast. On episode 129 of Main Event, Scott, Nate, and Steve preview AEW's Fighter Fest, ROH's Best in the World, and recap classic TNA from 2002. And on PlaceToBeNation.com, PTBN's tribute to 1994 is off and running with pieces on the Best Picture nominees for the 66th Annual Academy Awards, the 1994 World Cup, and the miniseries The Stand. Also, Excellent Network Adventure Team is back with a look at ECW One Night Stand 2006. Make sure you check out all of our social media pages and message board at www.bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list. And of course, we will see you right here back next week for a new episode of DC4U. Thanks again for listening.